and gals electing Trump was like a girl having revenge sex. They were saying, we're not even attracted to this guy, but we're fucking him anyway, just because he's not you. There was also a Schadenfreude aspect to this election. A certain amount of his votes weren't pro-Trump. They were pro-Saturday Night Live. People wanted to see the parody. You have to remember, this is the same country that almost had Sanjaya winning the sixth season of American Idol. There are a lot of people who go to fireworks shows hoping the barge catches on fire. And Trump reset the rules. There was a long period of time when submarine warfare was considered uncouth. It simply wasn't done. Until, like most innovations involving death, the Germans got involved. One sunken Lusitania later, everyone had to get in on it. Subs changed the playing field. So has Trump. It used to be unthinkable to throw shade at a political opponent on social media, talk about their penis size at a debate, call other nations shitholes, involve rival candidates' kids, apply schoolyard nicknames, or literally call bullshit at a rally. Trump didn't just change the game. He knocked all the pieces over and took a shit on the board. This unpredictability is one of the things I like about Trump. Other tyrannical nations are now petrified of us. Just ask the smoking corpse of Qasem Soleimani if he saw that one coming. We have our own maniacal ruler with his finger, or perhaps his dick, on the button. On that note, I offer a closing rant directed at the Trump derangement people, especially those in Congress running for president and in the media. In case you, dear reader, don't know the term Trump derangement syndrome, it applies to those who think Trump is an evil monster who can do no right. The people who, if Trump rescued a dozen puppies and children from a burning special needs orphanage, would complain that he didn't wipe his feet on the way into the blazing building. I'm not blindly defending everything he's done, as some others do, but I'm also not going to blindly turn every scandal into the War of the Worlds broadcast and join the chorus of boys and girls crying wolf. I don't think he's Superman, like the people at his rallies do, but I don't think he's Lex Luthor either. If you watch CNN or MSNBC, you'll see talking heads and Democratic politicians saying, our democracy is over, we're living in a dictatorship. Trump may be a dick, he's not a dictator. Just because you don't like him doesn't make him Hitler. As soon as the case for Russian collusion fell flat when the Mueller report was released, liberals went through the five stages of grieving. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and calling Trump a racist. They moved right on to the next line of attack. And then they got served up a new impeachment entree, the quid pro quo with the Ukrainian president. As it unfolded, I knew it would never bring Trump down. And I knew it didn't matter because the Democrat strategy is more nefarious. The Trump derangement crew doesn't actually have a plan. They're using all the scandals to cover up their own ineptitude. They could put up a candidate with good policies, or they can win another way, by keeping the noise meter pegged through all 4 years of his term. If they can keep that plate spinning until the next election, their candidate's platform can be, I don't have any policies, I don't have any plans. But don't you just want all this to stop? They're trying to get us to a saturation point where we'll vote for Pat Paulson, just to get it to end. They've got it to the point where we're praying for an earthquake in Ecuador or a ferry overturning in India just to have something different on the news. It's like when you end up yelling at your kid, fine, have the goddamn Snickers bar for dinner. I don't fucking care. I just don't want to argue anymore. You give in to the constant nagging. That's what this is. This is the real quid pro quo. Quid. Vote Trump out of office. Quo, we'll shut the fuck up. To those of you thinking, I just want it to end, me too. Not only the constant drumbeat of beat Trump, but also this chapter. Chapter 3. It's not all good in the victimhood. The pearl-clutching pussy thing went into high gear when Trump took office. But our toughness has slowly been eroding since even before I wrote, in 50 years we'll all be chicks. There's plenty of blame to go around. The aforementioned support animals, politicians, the soon-to-be-mentioned news outlets, lawyers, race hustlers, and television, specifically the true crime shows and Lifetime movies designed to freak women out. I noticed this starting to creep in soon after I had my kids. Hysterical hand-wringing from women has always existed, but it never really affected me. It came home to roost, however, when my kids came home from the hospital. I always said I married Lynette because she would be the mother to my kids. My mother wasn't to me. Present, not high and locked in a room chanting her mantra, freak out, and generally concerned with her children's well-being. I didn't anticipate she'd be wildly overconcerned with her children's well-being. You've heard of helicopter moms? She's Airwolf. I'm more of a submarine dad. You don't even know I'm there. I might not mind the worry so much if there was some consistency. Lynette, being a female, suffers from what I've termed chickening, a disease that has mutated and spread to many men in our society. It's an inability to grasp problems with rationality and to approach them based on facts rather than feelings. The story that encapsulates this unscientific method is a tale of two waters. When my kids were still young, they toddled around in a large house in the Hollywood Hills. This house had a courtyard off the kitchen, and off the courtyard was an access to a side gate. On the other side of said gate was a 9-foot-deep swimming pool, next to an underground bar that I built myself called Ace in the Hole, which features portholes that looked into the pool. While you could see whoever was swimming in the pool from the bar, you could not see the gate to the pool from the kitchen. This is where Lynette and I had an epic argument about water. I noticed that the gardener would pass through the gate and always leave it unlatched. Not wanting to come home and find my twins in Davy Jones' locker, I told him to make sure and latch it every time. And then I told him to make sure and latch it every time, and then I told him to make sure he latched it every time. I could write that sentence 10 more times, but rather than annoy you with the actual quantity of conversations in which I had to insist that he not facilitate the drowning of my children, I'll just let the record show that until I started docking him $50 for each time I found it unlatched, his behavior persisted. It happened only once after that, which should tell you socialist fucksticks out there all you need to know about capitalism and incentive. Anyway, knowing that this gardener was too lazy or too stupid to do what I wanted, or that he had a vendetta against my 2-year-old kids, I told Lynette that she needed to check the gate after he left. Her response was something to the effect of, "The gardener left the gate open. That's what he does." I agreed and insisted, "That's why when he leaves, you have to check it." She responded, "Yeah, but he left it open." I said what I always say, "He's dumb. You're not." If you ever hear me say that, just assume I'm calling you dumb. Juxtapose this with the time shortly thereafter when she asked me to refill one of the twins' sippy cups. When I went to replenish it with tap water, she slapped it out of my hand like I was filling it with water from Fukushima. She practically dove on me in slow motion, shouting, "No!" like a Secret Service agent taking a bullet for the president. Tons of energy to make sure the kids don't end up with a cup of municipal water in their belly, but very little to make sure they don't end up on a corner slab with pool water in their lungs. Here's another quick water-related illustration of chickening and how it permeates my life and every facet of society. Lynette spends my money on veggie wash. This is a useless spray bottle to clean your vegetables of pesticides, dirt, wax, while simultaneously cleaning your wallet of $7. There's no way this shit works any better than what comes out of your spigot. You know how I know? Every 3 months, when we start to run low, I top it off from the sink. I've been cutting it with tap water like a Coke dealer steps on his product with baby laxatives. I'm happy to report that neither Sonny nor Natalia has died from E. coli or Roundup on their carrot sticks. When Lynette reads that, she's probably going to murder me. So to the future homicide detective investigating my poisoning, the above paragraph is your motive. On that note, the true crime is true crime. A few years back, I was putzing around in the office while Lynette was out somewhere spending my money. Natalia came in with a friend who was over and said, "We want to go to the Pinkberry." My house at the time was only a few blocks away. All she would need to do is stroll down the shady side of the street, walk half a block, pop out, and Pinkberry would be right there. My first thought was, good, I'll just give you $20 and you can walk to the Froyo. My second thought was, I'll be crucified. The other kids' parents will find out, call Lynette, and I'll never hear the end of it. Actually, that was my third thought. My second thought was, this'll buy me a half hour to hop on YouPorn. To avoid getting the frozen shoulder from Lynette, I walked with them to the frozen yogurt place. Among the millions of things I've done that my parents never would have. Froyo didn't exist when I was a kid, but even if it had, it never would have passed these lips. Is there any less necessary abbreviation than Froyo? Anyone who's talking about frozen yogurt isn't in a hurry. It's the least urgent of all foods. You eat it on lazy Saturday afternoons. You've got all the time in the world to say both words if you're considering getting frozen yogurt. Guys rappelling out of helicopters aren't yelling, "I'll see you at the Froyo place!" Shrimp scampi needs an abbreviation, not frozen yogurt. There's never been a situation where someone yells, "Froyo!" and then yells, "Stat!" Frozen yogurt places are the greatest scam in the world. They can pay a teen with bad skin to sell you a 3-ounce medium or give you a wine barrel, sawed in half, and let you fill it yourself. Because they know no kid, or sadly, any of the adults who act like kids, is going to know when to say when. They just let the hogs go to the trough. We also trick ourselves into thinking that it's healthy because it's yogurt. It's not. Especially after we put a wheelbarrow of gummy worms on top of it. It's like a slot machine that comes sugar into a cup. It's a one-armed bandit that leaves you with one leg from diabetes. When Lynette came home, I told her the story, and she acted as if I'd actually let them go. The fact that I'd even considered it was a problem. I was getting the stink eye from something I hadn't done. To defend myself against my non-crime, I said, "This is a nice neighborhood." Lynette shot back, "That's exactly the type of neighborhoods they go to." Where does she get all this shit? I'll tell you. Dateline and all those Friday night true crime shows. These are heroin to Lynette. Whether it's about a mother killing her kids, like with the whole Casey Anthony trial, which Lynette didn't miss a second of, or Making a Murderer, the Netflix documentary about the random photographer for the Auto Trader who got murdered when she showed up to take pictures, Lynette's all in. My wife could be an FBI profiler based on the amount of true crime she studied. She definitely watches Dateline because their fear-mongering tagline is, "Don't watch alone." And she definitely tries not to watch alone. Now, she tries to get me in on it. My thought is, yeah, there's some really horrible people out there. I'm depressed enough with my life. I don't need to peek into someone else's tragedy. These shows are loved by all women and their cuckolded husbands. They're catnip for the pussy whipped. I don't know and wouldn't want to know a guy who's into this shit. Henry Rollins is not watching Dateline. It's just not practical enough. These murders are solved. It's not like if you can crack the case halfway through, you can call in and win a prize. Chicks don't understand statistics. They watch this shit and think, well, there's a 50-50 chance that'll be me. It plays into the victim mentality. Something could happen to you or your family. It's always inter-family. It's never a Crip shot of blood. The end. When a ferry overturns in the Indian Ocean, we don't even notice it because we're not going to be on any Bengali boats anytime soon. But we're all going to let our kids walk to the park. It has to tickle that could be me part of women. It has to pull the fear lever for them. In a quiet neighborhood. Wait, I'm in a quiet neighborhood. It could happen anywhere. Oh shit, we just bought a house anywhere. We're days away from a promo that says, on a special 48 hours, look behind you. My beef with this is that we're teaching our kids to be victims or potential victims. They're all walking around expecting to be abducted. I discussed this in my last book. Natalia's not scared of zip lines or other daredevil stuff. She wound up in an emergency room multiple times, and we've done more than one family whitewater rafting trip. During one of them, she jumped off a 25-foot bridge to plunge into 40-degree river water. But a few years ago at the raceway in Fontana, I let Sunny go to the bathroom alone and got a ration of shit from Lynette. I let her know that less than 40% of vintage race car guys are pedophiles. The next day, Natalia joined us at the track. At a certain point, she had to pee. I told her and Sunny to go together. Daddy was watching. She adamantly refused to go without me. After long negotiation, I lost. She made me go and stand outside the ladies' room. What happened to little Sheevil Knievel? Natalia's absorbing all this shit. It's part of her environment. I walk into the bedroom at 10 at night, and there's Nancy Gray saying, "They tied up the father, rounded up the kids, locked them in the basement, and set the house ablaze." If it could happen in this tight-knit community, it could happen anywhere. And Lynette is all ears. If Mama is steeping in this stupidity, how can she not be passing it along to her daughter? Lynette's current addiction is locked up abroad. Another fear-based, it could happen to you show. We should lock up all the broads who are into locked up abroad. Because the constant ingestion of fear about shit that will never happen is ruining our society. 90% of the women watching this have never left their state, never mind the country. I can't blame just Lynette. This is seeped into our culture. Around the time the twins were 8 or 9, there was a story in the news about two kids in Silver Springs, Maryland. The boy was 10, his little sister was 6. The mother let them walk to a park a mile from their house. Alone. Guess what? They were abducted. Lynette and every other mother's fear had come true. Except they weren't snatched up by a creep driving an airbrushed van. They were picked up by the police after someone with a vagina, sadly that includes a lot of guys I know, spotted them walking alone and called the fuzz. They were taken into Child Protective Services. Oh, and this happened twice. After an investigation, they were released back to the parents who had had the audacity to let the kids walk alone. What is more traumatizing? The non-existent horror of an Astrovan abduction, or the actual damage done by being taken into custody by police, being interviewed by the Department of Children and Families, and not being able to call your parents to let them know where you are? When did everyone become a tattletale pussy? They were fine. When I was a kid, I would ride my Huffy unattended, unmolested, and unhydrated all day long in the San Fernando Valley with no supervision and no problems. This is a rite of passage. This is how kids know they're safe. They wander, they come back to their secure base, and they develop self-reliance and resilience. To the cunt who called the cops, please watch Stand By Me and shut the fuck up. My wife and every other woman in America are now convinced that if their kids go to the boulevard alone, they'll end up as an Amber Alert. This never happens. It's always the disgruntled dad and a divorce gone wrong who takes them. Because of this crap, I'm likely to become a disgruntled dad and a divorce gone wrong. There was a case in 2016 where some nut job tried to snatch a 13-year-old girl from a dollar store in Florida, and the mom fought him off. But I'm convinced there was a secret meeting of hysterical moms who paid the guy $85 so Nancy Grace could show the footage for 3 days and say, "It could happen anywhere, anytime." By the way, "it could happen anywhere" doesn't really apply in this case. A dollar store in Florida is where most weird shit goes down. It makes evening news if someone doesn't attempt to abduct a teen at a Dade County dollar store. The more Lynette absorbs of this stuff, the tighter she clings to the kids. I'm afraid to ask her, when is the right time for them to be able to leave the house alone? I'm pretty sure the answer would be, as soon as Natalia gets her brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and right after Sunny has prostate surgery. Even the fictionalized versions play on fear. Last year, when the Nixium sex cult got busted, Lifetime execs immediately started turning into a movie titled Nixium Cult, A Mother's Nightmare. What I realize is you can put A Mother's Nightmare after anything and turn it into a Lifetime movie. It could be about a crab boat sinking in the Bering Straits, and if they put A Mother's Nightmare after it, every dumb chick would tune in. I'm a mother. I have nightmares. The only true crime story that wouldn't qualify for this is the Monica Lewinsky story, A Father's Nightmare. Last year, someone tweeted me a picture of their TV screen with the channel guide. Two spots above the episode of Crank Yankers was a Lifetime movie called A Mother's Worst Fear. It didn't even have a prefix like the Brenda Goldstein story. They just cut right to the chase. Eventually, these shows are going to end up like Coke cans with people's name on them. I think I could make some serious money on this idea. I'll get a list of the most popular names for mothers, ages 27 to 42, and personalize the show names. 8% of the population is going to have a common name like Michelle, Catherine, Christine, etc. So some chick named Jennifer will be scrolling through the channel and see a daughter abducted. Jennifer's worst nightmare. She'll freak out and watch it. Meanwhile, the Ace Man will be laughing all the way to the bank. Next week would be the same exact movie swapped out with Karen. Tell me this isn't a genius idea. TV's goal is to scare dopey dames into watching. And it works. Why? Because they don't have real problems. 20% of our brain is wired to protect us, to watch out for predators. But white chicks in America have no natural predators, so they have to create them. You ever notice that these movies always star blonde white chicks? They don't market them to black mothers because black mothers have real problems. They're keeping their kids out of gangs, hustling as single moms, working three jobs, etc. And there's no Asian version of this because Asians are all too busy working to become thoracic surgeons. Before I move off TV in fear, I have to go on a quick little tangent about Naked and Afraid. Two thoughts. First, it's got to be weird to be the cameraman on that show, constantly walking around with a camera on your shoulder and a boner in your shorts. I guess as far as gigs go, it's either that or be on Cops chasing a junkie down an alley. Second, I'm really annoyed with my cable provider for trying to convince me to watch Naked and Afraid. Every time I go to my channel guide, there seems to be an ad for this show. I have a computer. I can watch a show called Naked and Fucking. It's a lot better than what the National Geographic Channel is offering. I don't need to see scrambled tits and people covered in mud and bug bites. I'll call you when they cancel Naked and 19 years old getting plowed by a black guy. We've brainwashed our pussy-ass selves into thinking that everyone under 100 pounds who is not tied down is going to be abducted by ISIS. My wife's greatest fear is that the kids will be alone, a van will pull up, and a great white shark will jump out. Didn't see that one coming, did you? Statistically, they're much more likely to die in a car accident, but that happens every day. We're not in El Salvador. Cartel abductions are not common practice in my neighborhood. If you want your kid in the hospital, let them rollerblade. That'll have him in the ER much faster than killer bees, encephalitis, E. coli, or whatever fear du jour the news is serving up. All the news that's shit to print. Once you become a famous celebrity like me, and people start writing about you in the press, you'll notice just how incompetent reporters are. Like a quinceañera, bar mitzvah, or any other rite of passage, everyone should have a reporter follow them around and interview them for an article in the newspaper. Then sit back and watch how much stuff is inaccurate. When I was doing Catch a Contractor with husband and wife team Skip and Allison Bedell, the Hollywood Reporter referred to her as my wife. When the Washington Post did an article about my battle with the patent trolls, they said that I settled with the trolls, when in fact, we beat them. And as I've railed about for years, Entertainment Weekly wrote an article about season 5 of The Man Show and said that Jimmy Kimmel was making an ill-fated move into late night and that Comedy Central had performed a corollaectomy. Nice work, dickwads. Comedy Central begged me to do a season 5, and I said no. We had so many meetings where they licked my balls trying to get me to come back that I eventually had to stop picking up the phone. They were, in fact, right about Kimmel making his ill-fated move into late night. Whatever happened to that guy? That's print news. Now that I know they're incompetent boobs, I've sworn off reading. I vowed to never read again. Local television news, on the other hand, is a clusterfuck. When they're not trying to gin up fear with stuff like Germ Week, they're giving you no shit Sherlock information. Every year we get treated to the same idiotic stories about how to beat the heat. I would be much better served by a news story about how to beat my meat. The first of the groundbreaking ideas is always to hydrate. Good tip. How about try not to wrap yourself in tinfoil and eat Vaseline on your roof? No joke, one tip I heard was, it's hot, but not as hot if you don't stand in the sun. Thanks. My cat figured that one out. I'm an adult man. You're telling me to stand in shade? In LA, we're constantly treated to the news spectacle of the high-speed chase. Once I heard the reporter say the car was being driven by a possible gang member. Everyone driving a car in the San Fernando Valley is a possible gang member. We know it's not a Jehovah's Witness. Reporters cover these things long enough that when they eventually head down the street in the shitty neighborhoods, idiots come out and wave at the car and the news helicopter. This prompted another one of my brilliant sting operation ideas. We stage a high-speed chase, get an excellent stunt driver like my buddy Tanner Faust behind the wheel of a drug lord's confiscated car and have cops follow him. Then, everyone who comes out to high-five him and throw stuff at the cop cars gets arrested. You know they've got a couple outstanding warrants for sure. I used to think news just reported the news. I would look at the LA Times growing up and see a story about an accident with a minivan and two fatalities. Now we veered off into the sensationalistic, emotion-driven, chick-catering news. It's no longer, there was a two-car collision on Pico in Venice that left two dead. LAPD believes alcohol was a factor. Instead, we have chicks and soft dudes saying, there was a car accident involving a child. A child. She loved My Little Pony. She'll never see her 18th birthday. She'll never vote. Ugh, shut the fuck up and spit out some facts. Speaking of the LA Times, it's a worthless rag that makes me glad I'm functionally illiterate. They had an op-ed after the Parkland shooting that made me want to go on a killing spree. Let me preface all of this with the fact that while you can yank me and you can crank me, I'm no Ted Nugent. I own guns for protection, but I'm not a gun nut, though I once saw a documentary called Red Dawn, so I think I'm well qualified to speak about violence in schools. After the Parkland shooting, the LA Times editorial board wrote the following. We listened to the bleatings of the gun enthusiasts that, well, if those teachers had guns, then this wouldn't have been as bad. Been as bad. Think about that. If a pistol-strapping chemistry teacher had grabbed her 45 and unloaded on today's gunman after he killed what? One student? Three students? Five students? That would have been good news? Of course it'd be good news, you fucking imbeciles. If you were student number six who didn't die because an adult was armed, then that would be fucking good news. Whoever wrote this is an insane person. I was the worst student in North Hollywood High. If I was a part of the LA Times editorial team, I'd have stood up in the meeting and said, hey, fucksticks, we're shitting on our own point. In their attempt to make a case against guns, they made a very compelling argument for arming teachers. That must have been amazing in speech and debate club in high school. If this was a news story about a school bus crash instead of a school shooting, and someone was able to stop all but one kid on the bus from being killed, it'd be good news. You'd be touting that person as a hero. We get it, LA Times editorial team. You hate guns. Do I want to live in a world where armed teachers are necessary? Fuck no. But I don't want to live in a world with Kim Jong-un, the Taliban, or DJ Khaled either. We must, as Dr. Drew has always said, accept reality on reality's terms. Even the loved ones of those killed would understand that. If you gathered all the family members of every kid who died in a school shooting and conducted the world's most uncomfortable survey asking, would you have preferred a teacher at the school be armed, all their hands would go up. How could they not? Your editorial is the opposite of sense. If that pistol-strapping chemistry teacher was a good shot, one between the Parkland shooter's eyes before he killed again, you'd be a fool not to want that. By pushing this agenda and stoking the fire against common sense measures, you're now partially responsible. Please write a story about yourself as an accessory to murder. If every kid who wanted to go into a school and rack up a body count thought there was someone there armed and trained, that would slow their roll significantly. Don't try to convince me otherwise. They know that schools, just like movie theaters and country music concerts, are soft targets. The dipshits at the LA Times are hoping to keep schools soft, just like their brains. I wish we knew specifically who the author of the editorial is so we could never listen to anything they ever said again. If it's not outright stupidity, like the LA Times, it's shoddy reporting and exaggeration. Do you remember the story about the pedophiles taking advantage of the kids in cages at the border? How true did that turn out to be? It was a complete mischaracterization by Democratic congressmen. But the news media ran with it until the Office of Refugee Resettlement rightfully pushed back. The real version is bad enough. You don't need to gild the lily. We need a better metaphor than gild the lily, since those are both good things. How about pissing on a train wreck? I'll get back to you. What this achieves is tune out. News, you're the boy who cried wolf. Speaking of news and wolf, how bummed must Wolf Blitzer be with the decline of news? He rose to prominence with grand orchestral music swelling underneath him while he reported on Desert Storm. Now he's got teen girl techno blaring beneath him while he reports on Stormy Daniels. I started tuning out when I heard all the stories about the roving gangs raping and pillaging at the Superdome during Hurricane Katrina. Of course, none of that turned out to be true. The reports made it seem like the purge, but it turned out to be a total of 6 people died. 4 of the deaths were natural, 1 was suicide, and 1 a drug overdose. None of the people were bludgeoned to death on the 50-yard line. It's a confined area. It's not like there's a lot of ground to cover. It's an acre. If you can't truthfully report on what's going on in a space that Terry Bradshaw can cover accurately during a football season, you're fucking useless as a journalist. One of the problems is that for every bias you have, there's a network to reinforce it. Think Hillary Clinton is the devil in a blue pantsuit and want to hear about it from a hot blonde? Might I interest you in some Fox News? Think Trump is Hitler and want to hear about it from a person of color who is either gay or transitioning? One order of MSNBC coming up. A quick Fox-related story. I wasn't joking about hot blondes. Greta Van Susteren was a Fox News star, but you don't see her anymore because they apparently instituted a 7-up policy. No chicks can grace their airwaves unless they're a 7 or higher. I did a Fox and Friends-type show a couple of years ago called Outnumbered. It was aptly named because I was definitely outnumbered. Surrounded by blonde chicks with the whitest teeth you can imagine. There should be a dental office called Fox Chicks that just advertises that they do the teeth for all the Fox News Barbie dolls. The only thing whiter than a Fox News chick's teeth is her audience. At a certain point when I was on that show, I just blurted out, who do you think has slept together less? Bill and Hillary Clinton or Oprah and Stedman? They were shocked. I put it to you, dear reader. Who do you think is boned less? The point is, the networks do not work because they don't have to. They've got their audience. Now all they have to do is keep them. Fox isn't competing with CNN because anyone who watches Fox thinks CNN is liberal propaganda. And anyone who watches CNN thinks Fox is state-run television for dear leader Donald. Actual reporting goes by the wayside, while ginning up resentment and anger at the other team takes precedent. Facts be damned. Take the case of Nick Sandman, the kid who supposedly taunted the Native American elder on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. That story was basically made in a lab to get liberals pissed. He was white male and Catholic. His family had money, and he was wearing a MAGA hat. It's like when you bait a mousetrap. You put a little peanut butter on it because it's their favorite. This was the perfect bait for the media. We all saw that, But virtually no one saw the video of the 85-year-old man having a prayer vigil in front of a Planned Parenthood in San Francisco. Not ringing a bell? Wonder why. You should definitely remember it, because a woke San Francisco guy went up to him and yanked a pro-Jesus sign out of his hands. When the elderly man tried to hang on to the sign, the younger guy knocked him to the ground and started kicking him. You can hear him on the tape saying, "Stay down, old man, unless you want to get hurt." This guy is the worst person in the world. I'm pro-choice too, but I don't feel compelled to curb stomp the elderly if they disagree. I don't feel that this is news either. It's just footage of a crime. But if the smirking kid staring down the Indian is news, then this definitely is. The point is, you didn't know anything about it because it doesn't check the right boxes. Sure, it's someone young versus someone old, and this one is more violent, so it should have been seen and shared more widely. But in this case, the old man isn't the marginalized person and is pro-life, so it didn't make the cut at MSNBC. The most insidious narrative the more liberal networks propagate is about race. I accept that they are idiots playing on our emotions, but I do not accept their agenda to convince everyone, especially people of color, that they have a target on their back. There's a general trend in the media, except on Fox News, to prove that this is a reparably racist nation in which hate crimes occur every day. And comparing it to some magical land in your head that doesn't exist, holding it to some impossible standard, doesn't help. If America was a quarterback in the NFL, these assholes would declare every incomplete pass is unacceptable. I have zero tolerance for incompletions. Rather than focus on the 70% completion rate. Immediately after 9/11, there were violent attacks on Muslims. Sadly, there was also violence towards Sikhs who aren't Muslim, but rednecks thought they were because they wear turbans. But if you think about other cultures, or even about our culture in a different time period, how much different do you think the reaction would have been? We didn't go total Kristallnacht. Other countries, even in present day, would be having full ethnic cleansings if 9/11 had happened on their soil. Fortunately, many of those shithole nations don't have a building that tops three stories or a plane that isn't currently being pulled by a donkey. After the 2016 election, USA Today sifted through over 3,500 Russian Facebook posts that were designed to create chaos in our system. The narrative on the news is that the Russians were trying to get Trump elected. While that may be partially true, what they're really trying to do is sow division. And boy, did they find a way to do it. It wasn't about trashing one candidate over the other. Only 100 of the ads even mentioned Clinton or Trump. More than half the posts, 55%, were about race. They saw this as our weakness and exploited it. Let me make that point again, this time in all caps. They saw this as our weakness. They knew they could shake up our bee's nest because we're so primed and ready to attack each other around race. And a lot of that blame falls squarely on the news media. Somewhere during the Obama presidency, racist cop stories became fashionable. Just like the shark attack stories, pit bull stories, and road rage stories. The news grabs onto trends and makes it seem like this shit happens every day. Why? Because you watched last night and they want you to watch tonight. Once we stop taking the anxiety bait, the news moves on to something else. It plays not just on fear, but also on thinly veiled narcissism. We human beings need something attacking us. We have the same caveman wiring that protected us for millennia from predators and warring tribes. We need an enemy to satisfy that part of our brains, to give us a sense of identity. We need them. The Hatfields have the McCoys, Sunnis have the Shiites, and the Harlem Globetrotters have those robots on Gilligan's Island. Whitey's version of this is Purell and Veggie Wash. Black people's version of this is Trump and racist cops. I'm not trying to make the case that there are no hate crimes or racist cops in this country. There are. I'm just saying let's get it right, because every chicken little false alarm damages us as a culture. A certain percentage of people will never hear the retraction, if there even is one. and thus will continue to deepen their paranoia about the cops, the president, and society in general. When people feel victimized, they often act out with aggression, thinking, let's get them before they get us. And if they don't act out, they act in with depression. Hold on, I'm going to sniff. The worst thing you can do to a person is convince them they are a victim. The old newsroom saying is, if it bleeds, it leads. Well, they got that blood on their hands. All the hate speech that gets liberals riled up on campuses and the internet amounts to nothing. But the speech I hate, which is, y'all have a target on your back, does get people killed. When politicians and other grifters preach to the black masses that every cop is out to kill them, a certain percentage are going to absorb that and start treating cops like the enemy, either by running from them, fighting them, or disrespecting them. This is a fantastic way to get shot. The new trend at the time I'm writing this book is dumping buckets of water on cops in Harlem. This is the breakdown of rule of law right before our eyes. Guess what happens? Cops decide they don't want to be part of the involuntary ice bucket challenge. They stop going to those shitty neighborhoods, and crime goes up. There's a lot of talk nowadays about white privilege. You know what white privilege is? Not having to join a group and feel like I have to think like everyone else in the group and drink the victim Kool-Aid. My white privilege is knowing that cops generally tend to be insane assholes and not racists out to get me. My Reasonable Doubt co-host, Mark Garagos, represented the widow of Daniel Shaver, an unarmed 26-year-old man who was shot and killed by a white police officer in Mesa, Arizona. The officer was later acquitted despite video evidence. I'm sure you all saw the body camera footage. Oh, wait, you didn't, because Shaver was white. If he wasn't, MSNBC would be showing it nonstop, because it was by far the worst police killing ever. A citizen called the Mesa Police Department saying they saw someone in a hotel room with a gun. It later turned out that Shaver was an exterminator and had an airsoft pellet gun for shooting rodents. For clarity, I don't blame the person who called it in. I blame Officer Philip Brailsford, along with Sergeant Charles Langley, Brailsford's superior on the scene, who shouted confusing orders and did the exact opposite of de-escalation. After being ordered from his room and into the hallway, this poor bastard was told to lie on his stomach, sobbing and begging for his life, saying, please don't shoot me. Shaver, who was drunk at the time, reached to pull up his shorts because they had slipped after he was ordered to crawl on the floor of the La Quinta. Trigger-happy Brailsford unloaded 5 shots into Shaver's back, chest, and head, killing him. This wasn't an officer-involved shooting or a tragic mistake, like what sometimes gets talked about on the news. This was an execution. Despite this, Brailsford was acquitted and reinstated to the department in August of 2018 and was promptly granted retirement on medical grounds, receiving his full pension. If Shaver had been black, Arizona would be on fire like Ferguson, but it didn't fit the news narrative. Oh, and did I mention that Brailsford had "You're fucked" inscribed on the stock of his AR-15? Because one thing we can all agree on is that almost all cops are assholes. That profession attracts a certain breed of cat, the kind that likes power and is ready to wield it. They don't get into that line of work to hassle and potentially kill black people, just people. It doesn't matter whether the people are African-American motorists giving them the lip or drunk pest control guy with a BB gun. Look at how cops outfit themselves nowadays. Every officer looks like he's hanging off a Humvee in Fallujah. RoboCop had less technology on him than your average cop does today. And there are guys jousting at medieval times wearing less armor. But the more we focus on them being racist, the less we focus on them turning into the Terminator. I see a lot of fat cops out there. Much like my idea that for every $100 spent over a $1,000 baseline, the bride must be able to fit into her wedding dress for 1 year. I think all cops should be issued one and only one vest on their first day after graduating the academy. If they eat too many tacos over the years, hiding in their patrol car with a radar gun, handing out chicken shit tickets, and their guts start slopping out of their Kevlar vest, that's just more to get shot at. I think this will motivate them to get out and walk the beat a little bit more. So how about we stop with the stories about how it's open season on black people for racist white cops and talk about the real thing killing young black men, other young black men? No? Well, that would be part of an honest dialogue that everyone is always asking for, but runs from when some intellectually honest person, like myself, brings up the crisis of fatherhood in the black community. You know who certainly won't do that? The so-called community leaders, one of whom has plied his trade of race hustle so well he's found his way on MSNBC, Al Sharpton. Al's feelings about the Jews are far more racist than anything Donald Trump has ever said about black people, at least in public. How many N-bombs get dropped in the clubhouse after Tiger Woods beats him at Mar-a-Lago? I can only speculate. You've got to do some digging into Al's early work, like Tawana Brawley and Crown Heights, to fully appreciate what a bag of shit this guy is. There's nothing about him that's even vaguely religious, other than his self-applied title, Reverend. Can you imagine a white version of Al Sharpton? That'd be like me saying, I believe Joey Buttafuoco speaks for me as a member of the white community. We should give him a show on CNN. Al comes to your town, but unlike Grand Funk Railroad, he's not there to help you party down. He's there to shake you down. Al's going to threaten to boycott your business until you cut him a check and he goes home. There is one thing I do miss about the old Al Sharpton, though. Actually, it's about 150 things, namely pounds. I want Al to get fat again. I miss the Al Sharpton of the 80s who got his hot comb out and wore a medallion outside of his velour running suit. It was like he got the medal at the Fat Olympics in the 100-meter waddle. Whether it's Al Sharpton, Maxine Waters, Don King, Cornel West, Jesse Jackson, or any number of white politicians hoping to get or keep the black vote, they're profiting from the false narrative that we live in a racist society and that anyone who's ever purchased a Jimmy Buffett, Dave Matthews, or Kenny Chesney album is out to kill black people. As the social philosopher and writer Eric Hoffer said, every great cause begins as a movement, becomes a business, and eventually degenerates into a racket. Since we'll never have an actual honest dialogue on race, I hope you've enjoyed my honest monologue. I'd like to close this chapter out with a list of people who've taken one thing and built their whole life around it, whether it's something that makes them a victim or just makes them an asshole. If you're one of them, prepare to be triggered. Fake cough guy. Not too long ago, this happened to one of my lackeys when he was smoking a cigarette on the sidewalk in Burbank outside of the comedy club where we just finished a live podcast. Some hipster dude walked by my staffer blowing a butt and did an over-the-top fake hacking cough as if he'd taken in a lungful of secondhand smoke, thus making him a first-hand pussy. In my world, I have no problem with that person being taken out in a terrorist attack. How long is this guy's day? Every bus he walks by, every leaf blower, does he have to do the fake cough? The only response to that individual is the one I shouted when it happened to me some years ago at 3 a.m. in front of the CBS radio building after Dr. Drew and I had finished doing Loveline. Shut the fuck up, pussy. We get it. You think smoking is bad and want to shame me for it. So you need to act like I tied you to a chair and blew a carton's worth of Marlboro Red smoke in your face. Walk to the other side of the street. Hold your breath as you walk past, or just deal with it. But no, that wouldn't make you a victim. As I've said, have a fuck you, fuck off, shut the fuck up, go fuck yourself, or any of the fine family of fuck phrases chambered and ready to go. And have no fear of retaliation. You can definitely kick this guy's ass. It's not like Chuck Liddell and Brock Lesnar are walking around doing fake coughs because you had the audacity to light up. What happened, guy? This guy drives me nuts. This is the person who sees your shattered smartphone screen and needs to know how it happened. He sees a cracked screen and he's going to crack the case. What answer other than I dropped it is there? Am I supposed to reply? Mountain lion. Fended it off with my Samsung Galaxy. When there's a tale that involves a sniper's bullet, I'll tell you. But until then, assume it slipped out of my sweatpants pocket in the Ralph's parking lot and cease your CSI crack screen investigation. It goes back to the victimhood thing. This guy wants to call attention to your misfortune or mistake so that you can join him feeling like an unlucky, downtrodden person. Is this going to be endlessly fascinating for him, or is it just Schadenfreude? What information can he glean from this that makes his life better? None. So if this is you, move on, or I'm going to use my cracked iPhone to delete your contact and never speak to you again. Doesn't like barbecue guy. To be clear, this isn't a vegan or vegetarian. Those pussies don't hate barbecue. They hate their abusive stepdads. I'm talking about a person who does eat meat, but still isn't into firing up the grill. Barbecue is an indicator. Are you into life or not? If I ask someone, do you like barbecue? And they do 20 minutes on baby back versus beef ribs, they're in. This guy also enjoys travel, scotch, and 69ing. You know, all the important things in life. He knows how to carpe the fuck out of the diem. No one has ever said, I don't like barbecuing because it gets in the way of my dirt track oval racing on my Harley. Barbecue is messy and it takes hours to prep, but it's worth it. Enjoying working the grill shows good character, and it's communal. No one eats barbecue alone. The only guy I can't eat barbecue with is the guy who wears the apron while shirtless and working the grill. He's cut and he knows it. He's got a 32-inch waist and his lats are sticking out from behind the apron. He's playing it like he doesn't have time for a t-shirt. He's going to get back in the pool soon, as if that 11 seconds is going to make a difference. The apron over your washboard abs may say kiss the cook, but I say the cook can kiss my ass. As you can tell, I hate guys who have to show off that they're in shape, which leads to separate toes shoe guy. This jackoff needs you to think he's going to bust into a sprint at any moment. He's in the middle of a marathon, but he just had to stop at the Albertsons for some paper towels. He's the same guy who has to watch that's good up to 7,000 feet underwater. Is he planning on doing some free diving wearing his watch after he leaves the Chipotle in Arleta? Or is he just showing off? He thinks his shoes say, I'm athletic. But they really say, I'm athletic. Put on some Skechers like a normal person. You're not Zola Budd. Google her and laugh. Slip-on Vans dad. Speaking of footwear, there are certain shoes that go with certain types of people. Old comedy riders are always in New Balance. I've been in a million writers' rooms with a million middle-aged Jewish guys, and they all wear New Balance. I guarantee that Larry David is wearing a pair of New Balance shoes right now. They shouldn't be called New Balance. They should be called Jew Balance. Well, Vans are the customary footwear for the hipster dad. He drives his vintage Bronco, he has his funky frames on his glasses, and he's got the black and white checkerboard slip-on Vans. He's too cool for laces. I don't like it when dudes in their 50s are wearing the same shoes Spicoli wore in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Vans are neither fish nor fowl when it comes to footwear. They're not good for running, but they're not dressy either. They're just slabs of vulcanized rubber with cloth around them. No one has ever done anything athletic in Vans except for run from someone who wasn't in Vans. Workout couple. They're both fit, but fit for 52. The guy is hanging on to his last remaining shreds of his youth, and she's got an eating disorder. They're both intense and in love and showing a little too much skin. I suspect this is foreplay. They go to the gym together, get the adrenaline going after a good pump, and then go home and have a good hump. There's an envy element to my hatred of this pairing. There's no way Lynette would be at the gym spotting for me or helping me with my form. This is the healthy version of the other couple I can't stand, who sit on the same side of the diner booth. They both love each other so much, they have to saddle up next to each other on the Naugahyde and bump elbows while eating corned beef hash. Again, it's shaming. No way Lynette and I are in a diner booth and not across from each other staring at our phones. I have a rule for the diner booth couple. You're making it uncomfortable for the other guys who can't stand to be close to our wives with clothes on. If you insist on sitting next to your old lady while waiting for your eggs Benedict, you need to check your watch every 11 minutes and say, "Where are those guys?" so I can feel better. Bonus free riff, people. Whenever I see these guys on the same side of the diner booth, I make excuses up for them. I'm like, they must be waiting on a left-handed couple. But that couple never arrives. Steampunk guy. As far as I can tell, steampunk is punk with an engineering degree. This is rockabilly for people who make more than $37,000 a year. This is the asshole who simultaneously dresses old-timey and futuristic, just like Jules Verne imagined someone in the future would look like. He's got the top hat that the lead lesbian from Four Non-Blondes wore and Red Baron goggles, which makes no sense. No one has ever needed aviator